Welcome to the Breakthrough Success Podcast, helping you achieve that breakthrough you've always been looking for in your business. And now your host, Mark Gubertie.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gubertie, and this is the podcast for marketers and small business owners who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. I'm very excited about this show. We are going to talk about the Go-Giver Way with our guest, Bob Berg. Bob has sold over 500,000 copies of his book, The Go-Giver, which provides valuable insights on how to become successful by following the unconventional method of giving. He's spoken in front of audiences ranging from 50 people to 16,000 people and has shared the stage with today's thought leaders, Olympic athletes, and a former U.S. president. With all this in mind, we've got quite the episode in store for you. It is my pleasure to welcome Bob to the show.
Hi, Mark. Great to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you, Bob. And when I interview experts, I always like to start off with asking them what got them into their particular field, because I like to know like the why, the mentality that got you going. So how did you come across the Go-Giver Way?
Well, I began as a broadcaster, first in radio and then television. I was the late night news guy for a local ABC affiliate in Midwest U.S., and I wasn't particularly good at it and discovered I really did not have a really deep desire to do that. And I kind of graduated into sales. The challenge for me was that I knew nothing about sales, and we didn't really have any training where I first started. And so I floundered for the first few months until I was in a bookstore, and I came across some books on selling and started to apply that information. And, you know, within a very short period of time, my sales began to do very well. And it was really just a matter of now having a methodology or a system to be able to do something, which I think is very important for anyone, especially anyone starting out, to understand that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. If there's something you want to do, whether it's a skill set like selling or running a particular business, what have you, someone's already done it and they've probably documented it some way these days more than ever, certainly more than when I was younger. And but there were always books. And so I think when you follow a system, and I define a system as simply the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles. In other words, the key is predictability. If something's been proven that when you do A, if you'll do A and continue to do A, you'll get the desired results of B, then you know all you need to do is continue to do A and you'll get the desired results of B. So I think when you do that, you create the context for success. And so I was doing that. I worked my way up to sales manager of a company a couple of years later, and was doing that for a while. And eventually I started to teach people what was working for me and the people that I was teaching. And eventually a career came out of it as a speaker, and I've been speaking for quite a while now, and wrote a couple of books in the 90s, and eventually teamed up with John David Mann, a fantastic writer. And we co-authored The Go-Giver.
And you share a lot of great insights in the book. How did you come across those insights for the very first time?
Well, I was very fortunate in that I grew up as the child of really great parents and people who I would say live their lives as go-givers, even though that's not the wording or the terminology that would be used. But they were always being of value to others. They always created value for others. They were just good people who always helped others. And, so that was a good example. I think when I got older, I lost my way for a while, especially as I got into the business world and began to see that people weren't always doing things the right way. And but eventually I came back to it when I saw that doing things the right way not only felt better, but was actually lots more profitable. And that's really the key, that, you know, we because of everything we see on TV and we read about and we hear about, all these, we get these horrible messages about people who've been successful financially and so forth. And if you listen to the news or listen to other people sometimes, you'd really think it is the type of situation where you've got to be mean and nasty and heartless in order to do well. Very seldom do those people do very well. Typically, they cannot sustain their success. And it's usually in spite of those things, not because of those qualities that those people are successful. Typically, people who look to add value to others, and we can discuss, you know, during this conversation why it is. It's not a matter of magic or anything. There are very logical, rational reasons why it's this way. That to the degree you can move your focus from yourself onto other people and looking for ways to provide value to them, that's the degree to which you're going to be successful financially and in all the other ways.
Providing value is very important, and you talk about that a lot in The Go-Giver. And I like how you mentioned how people will succeed, like, in spite of all these bad things. Like, the people who are successful and do it unethically, I'm talking about those types. Like, they'll do it in spite of. And I want to transition into goal setting, because goal setting impacts, like, who we become and like how much we get accomplished. And the rule of thumb seems to be that what you focus on is what you get. But in your book, you state that if your primary focus is on making money, it's not going to happen. And you instead basically say you have to serve people instead. But if we focus on making money, why will it not work? Like, why is it different from like other goal setting ideas?
Well, first, I want to make sure to clarify that it's not that that you serve people instead of making money. No, in a free marketplace where no one is forced to buy from you, you will only make money as a result of serving other people. So let's go back to your question, because it's a really good one. In other words, goal setting and you know, where should that focus be? Now, by the way, there is absolutely nothing wrong with setting financial goals. I recommend doing that. My feeling is you should set goals in any area that's important to you, okay? And money is certainly a very important part of life, of living, of society. So no, we should set financial goals. What we said is that the focus, the main focus, if it's on making money, the chances are you're not going to be as successful financially. And here's the reason. Again, let's go back to what we call the free market, okay? And in this country, we don't necessarily have a totally free market, but it's close. It's close enough. Most of us will operate in a free market base. In other words, no one has to buy from us, okay? So, and I'll often say this when I speak at a sales conference. I'll ask the audience, how many of you by hands would agree with the following statement? Nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. And everybody puts up their hands and we all laugh, because we know, of course, no one's going to buy from us because we have a quota. They don't care about our quota, and nor should they. They're not going to buy from you because you need the money, and they're not going to buy from you even though you're a really, really nice person who believes in your product. Not at all. They're going to buy from you only because they believe that they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so. That's the only reason they're going to buy from you. And again, it's the only reason they should buy from you. And what's great about that is it makes the entrepreneur or the salesperson put their focus on the right place, and that's the other person. See, if you go into a presentation with someone, okay, and you are focused on the money, they're going to know that. They're going to be able to sense that consciously or unconsciously. And they're going to be much less likely to want to do business with you. But if you go in there with the sole purpose of providing value to their lives in the way they see it as being of value, and by the way, that's what selling is, by the way. Selling, by definition, is simply discovering what the other person wants, needs, or desires and helping them to get it through your product or service. But that's only the result of your focusing on them. And this is why we say that money is simply an echo of value. It's the thunder, if you will, to value's lightning, which means nothing more than that the focus must be on providing value to them. The value comes first, and the money you receive is simply a very natural and direct result of the value you've provided. And that's why when your focus is on the money, you're going to make less of it, because no one's in it. No one's buying from you because you want the money. When you focus on them, that's when they're going to feel good about you. They're going to like you. They're going to trust you. They're going to feel comfortable with you. And the chances are much better they're going to buy from you.
I absolutely loved your definition of selling, because it's not about money when you define selling in that way. I mean, you want to make money, of course, but
absolutely,
it's more about providing value to the person who you are serving. And providing a great experience is one of the ways that you can provide value to a customer. So people, in part, will buy for the experience and not just for the actual product. So how do you suggest we create a better experience for our customers so that we keep more of our customers while attracting potential customers?
Well, the value-based experience really is everything. It's the big separator. And here's why. You know, technology has leveled off the playing field. I mean, these days, most services and most products are basically equal. They work. They're good. They're going to serve that person doing what they're supposed to do, okay? And so because of this, there's not much of a natural differentiation just by the product or service itself. And when a prospective customer sees no real difference in a product or a service, and there's three or four or five or six people trying to sell them that product or service, it's always going to come down to who has the lowest price. And unless your last name is Walmart, trying to make low price your unique selling proposition is not a productive, it's not a fun, it's certainly not a profitable way to do business. So it's imperative that you're able to separate yourself, or as my colleague Scott McCain would say, distinguish yourself in the marketplace. And there are many ways to do that. That has nothing to do with your product or service, but everything to do with the experience. There are probably, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of ways, but they all tend to come down to five, what we call elements of value. And those elements of value are excellence, consistency, attention, empathy, and appreciation. And to the degree that you can communicate one or more, hopefully all five of those at every single touch point, within a transaction, that's the degree that you're going to distinguish yourself, separate yourself, and take price out of the equation. Remember, when you sell on low price, you're a commodity. When you sell on high value, you're a resource.
I absolutely love that this discussion we just had on high price, because people, they're a little skeptical, shy of raising the price really high, but you have to do that because not only does it create a better experience as long as you provide that experience, but you also make customers take it more seriously. I mean, I know that I've got some training courses for $10. I've gotten more expensive training courses. I'm more invested with my time, attention, and energy in the expensive ones than for the ones that just cost like $5 or $10. So that definitely makes a lot of sense in charging a higher price for your product, for revenue for you, but also for serving the customer.
Yeah, and remember, the key is that you want to give more in value than what you take in payment. And I know that sounds confusing when you first hear it, but it's understanding the difference between price and value, because price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. And it's finite. Value is literally defined as the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, what have you, that brings so much worth to this person that they will willingly exchange their money for it and feel great about it while you make a very healthy profit? And you know, it would be sort of, let's say you have and I know you do a lot of internet marketing, social media, you do also, and let's say you have a client and you're charging them X amount of dollars to show them how to master social media and whatever it is you charge. But what they get out of it is the ability to generate lots more income than what they paid you to learn how to do it. They've received more in value from you than what they paid you. So they feel wonderful about it, while you, of course, made a very healthy profit for your services.
There are some people listening to this episode right now who they're thinking along the lines of dog eat dog in a sea of competitive strife. And with this thinking, people focus more on the money and less on the value, and they're looking all around them to see how to stand out from the crowd versus being remarkable. How would you recommend someone with this dog eat dog mentality to pursue the go giveaway instead?
Sure. Well, first of all, let's understand there are a lot of people who operate in a dog eat dog style. That's just what they do. It's who they are. Fortunately, you don't have to do that in order to compete with them. In fact, you're much more likely to do well if you're not competing with them, but rather competing with yourself. And here's what I mean. And I first learned this in the 1910 classic by Wallace D. Wattles called The Science of Getting Rich. And he talked about living on the creative plane rather than living on the competitive plane. When you live on the creative plane, your focus is on creating value for others, okay, for your customers and those who will be your customers. When you're living on the competitive plane, your focus is totally on beating your competition. You are immersed in just thinking about your competition. Now, lest anyone misunderstand this, please get this point, okay? It is good to know about your competition. You need to know your competition. You need to know their strengths, their weaknesses, their opportunities, their threats, their products. Absolutely know of them, know about them, okay? What I'm saying is don't focus on them. Don't focus on them, because if you're too busy focusing on them, you can't possibly be focusing on creating value, okay? So know your competition, know who they are, know about them, but focus, live on the creative plane. Your energy should be going into finding, meeting, winning over, and ultimately serving more clients.
Value has been a cornerstone point within this whole discussion, and it's really important to provide that value. And a lot of people are looking for ways, how do I make money fast? It's one of those things that gets like millions of search results on Google. And in your book, you mentioned that if you need a lot of money, produce a lot of value. And if you want to make money fast, provide a lot of value fast. So basically, the simple equation is more value results in more money over time. And with this equation in mind, what are some ways that we can produce more value at a faster pace?
Well, this depends solely upon what you do. When we say, and what happened was in the story, the speaker at the time, Deborah Davenport, was relating a story that she talked about needing to make more money, and she heard the person say then provide more value, and then someone asked, well, what if you need to make money fast? Well, then find a way to more quickly provide value, and that's fine. That's not to be confused with you know, quick money or get rich quick. Typically, get rich quick. Not that it never happens. It certainly does sometimes, though very, very, very rarely. Okay. I mean, it's not something to depend on. It's not a strategy. Get rich quick is not a strategy. Typically, if you get rich quick, you're going to get poor just as quick. Okay. And so I would say that's not a strategy. But if you need to make money faster, you need to find a way to reach more people with your value and offer your value to them quicker than not doing so. So there's nothing magic to it. There's no easy answer. But depending upon what it is you do, if you need to make more money, find a way to add value in however you can to this person. If you need to make money faster, you know, get on the phone, knock on more doors, more emails, more, you know, connecting with people that can put you in the position where you're going to be able to touch more people's lives with value in a quicker way. But, you know, there's certainly nothing magical about it.
I totally love the concept of touching people's lives. When I first came across that in your book, I was totally blown away because, like, I do work to create an impact, but I love having the goal of reached out an impact this many people by the end of the year. That sounds like such an amazing goal for me, and it's one of the goals that you emphasize within the five laws that you mentioned within Go Giver. So I was wondering if you could give us a quick review of those five laws that you and John share in your book.
Sure. Well, the laws themselves are the laws of value, and we discussed that actually a little earlier when we said give more in value or use value than what you take in payment. Law number two is the law of compensation. Law number three is the law of influence. Law number four is the law of authenticity. And law number five is the law of receptivity. Now, what you were just asking about was actually the touching lives was the was law number two. And this is the law of compensation, which says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment, law number two tells us that the more people whose lives we touch with the exceptional value we provide, the more money with which we'll be rewarded. So law number one is all about providing value. That's the foundational principle. But that represents only your potential income because you simply can't make a huge income serving one person. So law number two is all about how many lives you impact with the value you provide. So, you know, how do you do that? You find a way to meet people and add value to their life, connect with new people, be introduced to new people. Get referrals. That's a great way to meet new people. Referrals are a fantastic way to touch more lives because with referred prospects, they're easier to set the appointment with because you're going in on borrowed influence. With referred prospects, price is less of an issue. It's not a non-issue or not an issue, but it's less of an issue, again, because of borrowed influence. So you can, again, focus on selling on value rather than on price. With a referred prospect, it's typically easier to complete the sale because you're going in on borrowed trust. And with a referred prospect, they're usually already of the mindset that that's how you do business because that's how they met you. So it's typically, you know, in their mind, referring you to others is simply a natural part of the process. So that's how you want to reach more people's lives who you can then touch with the value you provide through your product or service.
At the beginning of our interview, I went into that whole introduction of how you sold over 500,000 copies of your book and how you could speak in front of audiences of tens of thousands of people. And that is quite the impact you are making. And you mentioned referrals, which has been really big for you. Is that the main way that you touch the lives of so many people, or are there other ways that you touch as many people's lives as possible?
No, I think that's the main way. The book itself is a book that is often referred to others, given as gifts to others. Companies buy lots of them for their employees and their sales team and so forth. So that's a big part. But I've also, you know, the book's been out 9 years now, and I still do about 7 or 8 interviews a week on this book. So I've never stopped promoting the book. So it's, you know, it's always a work in progress. So between, you know, speaking, between my podcast and my blog and you know, I have a fairly big presence on the various social media, and so forth. Yeah, there's a, you know, we get the word, we continue to get the word out there.
That is very impressive to do 7 to 8 interviews every week and then do the rest of your business. I mean, I feel like it's doable, but just to hear that and like, since I'm not doing it yet, I really appreciate you spending the time and interacting with all these different podcast hosts.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
So that is quite the skill to do. Basically, what you're telling me is an interview every single day on average. And that is quite the habit that helps you to basically expand your reach. And I was wondering, what are some of the other daily habits that you use to live the go-giver lifestyle?
Well, I mean, as far as habits goes, it just means that I'm always looking for ways to provide value to others. So I try in whatever it is I'm doing, you know, asking myself, how does this serve? Who does this serve? Does it serve? You know, is my focus in the right place? And so, you know, you try to keep yourself on track. We're all human. And as human beings, we all are naturally self-interested, right? And to deny that, I think, is to deny reality. Sometimes I think what we have to do is rather than forego our self-interest, which would be impossible and totally unnatural, I think we need to willingly suspend our self-interest and just, you know, just kind of to ask, how can we be of service? How can we be of value to others?
We are approaching near the end of our interview, and I like to ask the final few questions that I ask for all of my guests. The first question is about a challenge. So I'm wondering, what's one big challenge you faced in your life, and how did you overcome it?
Well, I grew up having, and I didn't even know this till I was in my mid-20s, but I grew up having OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, which is, and I've had it all my life and I still have it, and which is different from, you know, when you hear people say, oh, I'm so OCD about this, that's a totally incorrect use of the word. Being obsessive about something or you know, caring a lot about something is not obsessive compulsive disorder. It's a whole different thing. But it really plays a lot of games with your mind, and it's really a tough way to tough way to go through life, because it's a combination of really horrid, bad, intrusive thoughts and actions that you do that are sort of magical in nature, as though that's going to get rid of the thought. Very hard to explain, but if anyone's interested or think they may or have or someone they know may have OCD, you can look up the OCD Foundation. I think it's iocdf.org. And they have wonderful information. And fortunately, these days, they know so much more about it than when I was a kid. I'm 59. And when I was a kid, that nobody knew about this. And so, again, it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s that it was actually diagnosed. But that was that's been a hard thing to go through life with. But, you know, we all have our things and we deal with them. And so, you know, whether I've overcome it or not, I don't know. But I certainly work within it.
I know that OCD is like a serious issue. I do hear some people saying like OCD and like the way you described before as being really focused onto something.
Right.
That's a really good discussion. I mean, I don't want to like go too deep into here because I know this could turn into quite the lengthy discussion and like go hours long. But that is very interesting that you bring that up, because it's like a lot of people just say it for the focus part.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. They make a joke out of it. You know, they you know, OCD about this or on that. And again, it's just a misappropriation of the word, and they don't mean anything by it. They don't. It's nothing malintent. It's just incorrect. So, but that's why I bring it up. And it seems like whenever I do bring it up, there's someone who, you know, either emails me or I hear from later on that says, yes, I heard you mention the International OCD Foundation, and I contacted them, and it was the best thing I ever did, and so forth. And so, you know, anyone that can be helped by this, I'm only too happy to help.
That's awesome. Impacting even more lives.
Thank you.
You've gone through quite the journey. You've been able to reach out to all these people, and I'm wondering, throughout this whole journey, what is the best lesson that you have learned?
You know, I think it was probably 36, 37 years ago. I had just been in sales for a couple of years. And, you know, I was doing okay. But, you know, like I said, I learned how to sell. So my sales are good. And so I could sell. But I still wasn't near the potential that I could be. And it was really because my focus was in the wrong place. And I remember going back to the office one day, and one of the sort of seasoned old veterans, he wasn't actually even in sales. As I recall, he was in the engineering department, but he was a very wise man. And he said to me, I think he saw me looking discouraged because I had just come back after not making a sale. And he said, Berg, and I think he saw me as sort of like Joe in the story, in The Go-Giver, right? As the young up-and-coming kid with great potential, but wasn't quite realizing it. And he said to me, Berg, can I give you some advice? And I said, yeah, sure, absolutely. And he said, you know, if you want to make a lot of money in business, if you want to make a lot of money in sales, he said, don't have, and this goes back to what we were saying earlier, right? He said, don't make money your target. Your target is serving others. Now, when you hit the target, he continued, you'll get a reward. And that reward will come in the form of money, and you can do with that money whatever you choose. But never forget the money is simply the reward for hitting the target. It's not the target itself. Your target is serving others. And that lesson made all the difference for me.
That's powerful. And it's definitely something that you talk about in the book. It's a recurring theme. And I really cannot say enough how much I've enjoyed reading the book. But there's one problem. I've finished the book, and I need more book recommendations. So you've offered some book recommendations already. I was wondering, what are three great books you can think of right now other than the ones we already discussed?
Well, I would recommend everyone read the 1936 classic by Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. To me, that's a gold mine, and that's a book that you should read and reread and reread again. It's about people skills. And it's one of the most important books I think that's ever been written. Another great book is called The Secret of Selling Anything. And this is a book that was actually written in the 1960s in the form of two manuscripts that were never published. His name is Harry Browne, B-R-O-W-N-E. And it was only after he died, right around, I think, 2007, if I recall, 2008, that his widow found the manuscripts, and she sold them to a publishing house because she saw just how amazing they were, and they put that in the form of a book, which again they called The Secret to Selling Anything, and the author's Harry Browne, B-R-O-W-N-E, and the two manuscripts, there are two brief manuscripts. The first one was all about just understanding human nature. And the second part of it was how selling relates to understanding human nature. And to me, it was the most beautiful look I've ever seen it at not only understanding human nature, but respecting human nature, operating within the context of human nature, and in such a way that as a salesperson, you can really bring the most value to the most people. So I thought that was a fantastic book. And another one I just read recently, which has quickly become one of my all-time favorites, is called The Untethered Soul. And it was written by Michael A. Singer, The Untethered Soul.
Those are really good book recommendations. I mean, you presented them very well. I'll be sure to check them out. But people listening to this episode who they've really enjoyed it and you've provided a lot of great value, they want to check you out too. So I'm wondering, and I know the listeners are wondering too, where can we find you on the web?
Sure. The website is The Go Giver. It's without the hyphen, just thegogiver.com. And while they're there, they can scroll down and get they can read the first chapter or an excerpt from The Go Giver and some of my other books, Go Givers Sell More, The Go Giver Leader, whichever ones they'd like. And then they can click through if they like what they see. They can find my podcast there if they like. We usually have a new episode every Tuesday morning that comes out. And they can join the Go Giver Ambassadors group, the Go Giver Way. And of course, they can connect with me on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and so forth.
Bob, it has been such a pleasure to interview you today. Thank you for taking the time to be a guest on Breakthrough Success.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you for having me. I just love the great work you're doing. Keep it up.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed that interview. The Go Giver has such profound advice and gives life a positive twist. Do good for others and good things will happen to you. Of course, there's more than that, but I just love the fact that you could do good for others and then good things happen to you in return. If you believe in the dog-eat-dog mindset, then you are missing out on increasing your influence and growing your business as a result of that increased influence. While I like to have financial goals, my interview with Bob inspired me to have a new goal, and that new goal is based on the number of lives I impact within a certain time frame. This was a really great interview. I really got the idea of doing good for others, and I mean, that's been such a strong focus already, but now I know that I could focus even more of my time, attention, and energy in that direction. If you forgot to take notes, then don't worry. We've got you covered with the show notes. Visit markgubberti.com/E37 for those. you can ask your questions over there, which I'll be happy to answer.
To never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whatever player you are using. If you are a regular listener and haven't done so already, I would greatly appreciate it if you could give this podcast a review or a rating. Two ways you could do this are through markgaberti.com/iTunes or markgaberti.com/Stitcher. That ends this episode. Don't forget, dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgaberti.com/retweet.
This podcast is a production done by Mark Gaberti. For more insights, head on over to markgaberti.com.